The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, has developed a 130-foot boat that can prowl the seas unmanned, a kind of 21st century ghost ship. Military officials think it can be effective in detecting submarines. For an assessment of whether this is where we're headed, we turn to Brian Clark, senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. Brian, good to have you back.
Great to be on. Thanks, Tom.
This ship, it's a boat because it doesn't have a boat on it, right? So that means it's not a ship.
Right. It's a ship, and it's an unmanned ship.
It is a ship.
Right. So it's a ship, and it's about 130 feet long, like you were saying. And it looks, it's very futuristic looking. It's a catamaran, so you've got a narrow hull, and then you've got two outriggers that come out of it. And it's made out of a combination of composite material and steel, but it's big. So it's as big as it looks kind of like a yacht, maybe, if you were to make a really fancy yacht and make it futuristic looking.
Just no windows.
No windows, right? There's a little bridge that they put on it so people can be on it for testing, but they'll take that off as soon as the testing's complete.
And how is it powered?
So it's powered by diesel engines. It's got a pretty traditional power plant and a pretty traditional control system, just like you would have on any other ship. What DARPA was trying to do here is focus their attention with the new technologies for the autonomy of the vessel. So they try to keep everything else as low tech as possible in order to reduce the risk associated with the non-autonomy aspects of the ship.
So when you say autonomy, that means someone is not controlling it with a joystick, but it has a pre-programmed route. And what does it do? Navigate by GPS?
Right. So even more so than that, what it'll do is have a pre-planned set of missions it has to do with locations in which those missions have to be done. And then the vessel itself will choose its route in order to get there. And so it'll use GPS to determine where it is in the world and where it is relative to where it has to go. But instead of a pre-planned route that you would program in like you were programming your drone, the hobby drone, this thing will actually determine where it needs to go. It'll evaluate the traffic that's out there, steer around traffic, stay out of shipping lanes, or stay in shipping lanes until it needs to depart from those shipping lanes. So it's smart enough to be able to build its own plan for how it's going to go about doing the mission.
And it must take into account weather and so forth?
Right. So it has to be told what some of the weather concerns might be so it can steer around those or at least take a good course in those weather conditions.
And who built it for DARPA?
So there was a shipyard out in Portland who actually built the ship, and then DARPA is working with a number of companies, Leidos being one of them, to build the autonomy systems for it. So Leidos, I believe, is the overall prime contractor for the ship, and then the shipyard in Portland actually built the hull.
All right, so this is the first surface vessel, then, that is autonomous. I guess they have some undersea drones that have been worked on also?
Right. The Navy does have a few unmanned surface vessels, but they're small. They're like the size of a little, a small pleasure boat, 15 to 30 meters long or 15 to 30 feet long, rather. And those are used for scouting and they're used for mine warfare missions where they'll drag mine warfare gear behind them. So they're relatively small. This is the first large autonomous ship that the DOD's built.
So the small things are more like robotics versus this, which is really can go the seven seas out of sight of anybody.
Very good point. Yeah. So the smaller vessels are really something you'd control kind of like with a joystick, whereas this thing is going to go be able to steer itself to a location.
And so earlier I mentioned the possibility of using it for submarine chasing, but is that what the Navy thinks it's the best use for?
Not necessarily. So originally DARPA had envisioned this as being a vessel that could go out, use a passive sonar to find the general area in which an enemy submarine might be operating, and then get close to it and then use an active sonar to start pinging on it, just like you see in the World War II movies. And once they've tracked the submarine, follow it around for the duration of its deployment or until if somebody wants to attack it, we would then bring in something to attack it. The problem the Navy has with that is in peacetime, that's a very provocative thing to do is to be, pinging away at somebody else's submarine with a vessel that's following it on the surface. And then in wartime, it'd be somewhat vulnerable to attack by the enemy because now you've got this 130-foot ship that's driving around on the surface following their own submarine.
All right. So if that one is out, although maybe Russia would do it since they buzz our ships with aircraft, maybe they would buzz our submarines with something unmanned. What could it be used for?
So once you've got a vessel of that size that's able to operate autonomously for a long period of time, you could use it for a lot of things. So one mission that the Navy might look at is for decoying carrier strike groups. So if you have an aircraft carrier driving around, the concern is it's a very detectable target as lots of radars and lots of things that are emitting off of it. You could put decoy systems on this ship and have it be your simulated carrier so it could attract the attention of somebody's surveillance systems or their missiles.
We're speaking with Brian Clark, senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. And what do you think the Navy brass feels about something like this, where it's a ship or a boat or whatever it is, a large vessel that is unmanned? There's no captaincy associated with it.
Right. So I think they're very excited about the idea of having something that's large, unmanned, and autonomous. They could go out for a long period of time and take some of the pressure off of the manned ships, because the Navy's fleet has been shrinking over the last 30 years or so. And some of the missions that Navy ships are expected to do are simply surveillance missions, where you're going to go, listen in on somebody else's electronic communications, or you're towing a sonar array to go monitor their submarines. Well, this ship that DARPA's built could do some of those missions and take the pressure off the manned fleet. So they're excited about that idea. And then in terms of the autonomy being out of the control of a person, I think the Navy's intent is not to put weapons on this kind of system. So the ship would be driving around and it'd be under the control of some commander who would give it tasking but not tell it exactly where to go.
But there must be some override capability, because I guess how closely can it maneuver, say, in a port or among a crowded area with lots of vessels?
It's very good at that. So that what they've used in this system and in some of the other unmanned ships is the same systems that the Mars rover uses to be able to maneuver itself around and avoid running into things that are out there. And then also they've got programmed into it the rules of the road for ocean-going vessels. So it's like programming your unmanned driverless car to be able to operate the streets alongside manned cars.
And if they decided to weaponize it, is there any plan to, if they put a 57-millimeter gun, say, on it,
right,
that can do a lot of damage close up or even not so close up. But is there any operational concept for how that might work?
So the Navy's not thinking of arming this thing yet, but the first way to do it would be to have it just be the remote-controlled carrier of weapons that somebody else is directing. So you could have it carry missiles that you tell the ship where to launch the missile to, and then the missile's largely autonomous on its own. So the ship's not deciding when to launch, but a person is telling the ship to launch. So that's probably the first generation of how this would be done.
And that alone is a step beyond the current missile ships that they're dealt with, very small crews, lots of missiles,
right?
But those are already afloat, so this is a step beyond that.
Right, exactly. So this would be, another magazine of missiles available to a manned ship to use when they run out of their own missiles, for example.
Okay, and then you said beyond that, there's even more thoughts.
So what you could, one thing that some of the people working in this field are looking at is could I have the vessel make its own determination with regard to a target that it has to engage? So this would be the example of if you took a Predator drone that today we use a joystick and steer it and then tell it when to launch. You would instead say, look for a target that looks like this, and you can attack it when the time comes to do so. What a lot of people are working autonomy right now are figuring out is, how do I do the automatic target recognition to be able to determine that that's really the enemy and it's the exact kind of enemy target that I was told to attack?
So this gets to be interesting, because you have unmanned or autonomous vehicles in the air and afloat that could kill people and armies and navies. And so you have unmanned drones and autonomous vehicles looking for other drones and autonomous.
Right.
And so they shoot each other.
Right.
Question is, how do you know when you've won?
Right.
This changes war doctrine a lot.
It does. And so it makes attrition warfare maybe more likely in the future, where the goal is to take out as many of the other guy's drones as possible.
All right. So it becomes kind of a chess match in some ways,
right,
without human blood, at least in the initial stages.
Right. You start to manage your drone force, your unmanned force, to a much greater degree than you are directly fighting your own.
All right. We'll have to see how that one develops. Brian Clark is senior fellow with the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom.
Read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.